In the year 2014, putting a white paper like this would have meant the country is in real deep shit. And the new government that's coming in, it sort of puts a fig leaf saying that you're trying to put an excuse.
In 2014, he put the country first. In 2024, he is putting politics first.
So if you look at it, Vajpayee inherited close to 18%. He brought it down to 8. And NPA shot up after the UPA 10 years back to what it was, 18%.
What is the situation today?
3%.
So 18% to 3%?
3%.
Modi ji is not able to even achieve 8% in a year. So, and we did 10%. That is the difference between an economist prime minister and a chaiwala.
2014, you inherited a fragile 5 economy. So, I'm already negative by 30-40%. I need to clean up the shit of the previous government.
In white paper, you have listed 15 scams. If they did really such big scams, lakhs of crores, why they have not been punished 10 years?
That's exactly what happened with Manmohan Singh ji. He was given up on a platter a booming economy. You had the lag effect of capital investment. Global economy was booming.
Some people would say that Modi government has also benefited hugely from outside factors. For example, the crude oil prices.
There's absolutely no anti-incumbency, as you pointed out.
I didn't say absolutely.
Okay.
You
okay.
Are saying it. As far as the quality goes, they are as good as what is being produced in the West.
If you can give me some 5 different brands that Chinese items that you purchase versus the unbranded local
mic
item
that we are using. They focused on the quantity and they learned the basics and then they upgraded themselves.
Where have they upgraded is the question that I'm asking. Today, how many cars do you see apart from MG of the Chinese make on the Indian roads?
Because you have not talked about the good things that Manmohan Singh government did. For example, FDI liberalization, the nuclear policy deal with the US. Black and white paper hai ye, not grey paper. Namaste sir.
Namaste.
How are you?
Absolutely good.
Sir, for people who are hearing you for the first time, can you please introduce yourself?
It's a pleasure being here. Dr. Sameer Kagalkar from Bangalore. I'm an economist and I hold a PhD from IIM Bangalore in the area of corporate strategy, policy, economics based primarily. I've been in the corporate world, startup, academia, and the last 10 years predominantly with the campaign, policy, and in the government. I had the opportunity of being additional private secretary to the late Union Minister, Anand Kumar ji, had a hands-on understanding of scaling up Jan Aushadhi in particular. And the last 3.5 years, I've been heading the economic cell for BJP Karnataka, worked closely with the national leadership team on policy, governance, and economic research.
So there are so many things that I want to talk to you about. So given your experience and what you are doing currently, but particularly we were talking and the white paper has come out for the last, it was expected in 2014, but it has come out now. And there is not much discussion that is happening around it. So I was hoping that someone would come and we will discuss that. But I will discuss so many things we will in future episodes with you.
Sure.
But on this episode, we will focus only on the white paper.
Absolutely.
Because third objective of white paper is that there should be a discussion around it. Positive, negative, we should evaluate the pros and cons. But since you are working with the BJP, I expect ki you will defend it. So, nonetheless, we will discuss all the questions around it.
Absolutely.
So, the first question that naturally comes to mind is, and everybody has asking this question, like, white paper should have been introduced in 2014. So, why Modi ji did not introduce it then?
Valid point. Absolutely valid point. And if you go through the white paper, it's a very brief but a very intense document, 59-page intense document. The introductory part itself speaks of why we didn't do it in 2014. Well, it's the right question. What is a white paper before we go into saying why is it that it didn't happen then versus now? Briefly, a white paper is a formal document, an official document about the state of affairs of a particular thing. It can be economy, it can be any other aspect that the government would want to formally put in front of the people, officially put in front of the people. Now, the thing is, in the year 2014, if you look at it, the Indian economy was in a big doldrums. India was unfortunately categorized as one among the fragile 5 economies. It's so fragile like kanch ki tarah. It might break at any point in time. So, that was the situation. And the obviously the world can see what's the situation. When the world is calling you a fragile five, when day after day people are losing hope and optimism, scams are tumbling out of the window, out of your skeleton day in and day out. The last thing that any new government should do, which puts the country on top, is give some more bad news that will further shaken, that further shakes the, what you would call?
Confidence.
The confidence, the hope, the optimism, and a sense of yes, we can do kind of a thing. It's not to say that you don't put it in front of the people, but you decide when to put it in front of the people.
Hmm.
I'm reminded of a verse from Mahabharata. It's Yudhishthir speaks about it. When the Kauravas were attacked by certain Yakshas, and Yudhishthira says, no, we should go and help them. Bhima says, why? We are not on good terms with them. If they are taking a beating, let that be so.
Hmm.
Then Yudhishthira says, Paraif paribhave prapte vayam panchadhikam shatam paraspara virodhetu vayam pancha shatam hivai. Matlab, if you are talking of country as a whole, we are all together in this. So we are 105, he says. Let us 100 Kauravas plus 5 Pandavas, we are 105 if there is any attack on our kingdom. But if there is nothing from an outside perspective, it's purely internal, then vayam pancha, you guys are 100. We are 5, you are 100.
Hmm.
In the year 2014, the putting a white paper like this would have meant the country is in real deep shit, absolutely no hope, things are going from bad to worse. And the new government that's coming in, it sort of puts a fig leaf saying that you're trying to put an excuse. Arey, itna bura hai, so I don't know what I might do. That itself sets sort of a fig leaf for you not to do certain things, and the people might see it as wise, perceive it as wise. Today, 10 years down the line, you have achieved so many things. Of course, lots more needs to be done. But you have significantly transformed the Indian economy. You're in a position of strength.
Mm.
You're one among the top five fastest growing economies. World Bank calls you a bright star among the gloomy world otherwise. And now you can look back and say, "Arey, utna tough position tha, we have transformed it." Putting it in front of the people, as you rightly pointed out, is about people knowing the right fact.
So you are essentially saying that in 2014, mm-hmm. when Modi ji came to power, he put the country first.
The introduction says in as many words, nation first was our philosophy, was our principle, because of which we did not put it in front of the people.
And now in 2024, he is putting politics first. Would you say that because it's time for politics, and anyone who wants to do politics will have to do these things also?
Yes and no. As I said, paraspara virodhetu vayam pancha shatam.
Abhi wo time aa gaya
hai. Yes,
paanch versus so wala.
At some, no, you have to draw a line. When would you want to put it in front of the people? Elections are the time.
Mm.
If you call it a festival of democracy, if you want to call it participatory democracy, this is the time people should know. People should know the facts without that hurting you. That is more important.
Mm.
Now, today, if you look back, probably what we went through 10 years ago, it doesn't hurt us anymore because we have come out of it. And therefore, it's good to know, and for our next generation to know. For example, my son and daughter would be first-time voters. They should know how things were 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's very important. Easy to that people forget.
Forgetting is second part. They don't even know. They were 10 years, 8 years old at that point in time.
Hmm.
Right? And they wouldn't have had the felt the impact. Probably I would have felt it as a parent, but not them.
Hmm.
So for them, now they're the first-time voters. They're coming out and voting. Country is fairly stable. Now they should know. Now tell me, what was the real situation then, earlier to that? How is it that the transformation is happening? Because you have two sets of people peddling two sets of narratives in a way, right? One from the Congress side and one from the BJP side. It's important that you get to know the whole story.
Okay, so let's talk about all these aspects that were troublesome in the Indian economy in 2014.
Sure.
So, what was the most shocking part about this white paper?
It was the NPA.
Mm.
Finally, at the end of the day, when you're talking of misgovernance, when you're talking of mismanagement, when you're talking of scams, everything boils down to money. Money either of the government, which once again means the hard-earned money of the public. That kind of money was being siphoned off left, right and center. At the worst case scenario, at the best case scenario, it was down the drain for no benefit. So you had both the inefficiency at the same time siphoning off.
Hmm.
Just to give an instance, when you talk of NPA, NPA, what does an NPA mean? An asset that is not performing. Asset is a loan. Bank would have given a loan to someone. And if you take numbers, you know, large, you would have given loan to 100 people. There is a possibility that 2-3 businesses will fail and therefore they are not able to repay. But if that becomes 10, if that becomes 20, either there is a situation wherein the businesses are really not able to do it, or the worst thing. What is the worst thing? That they are taking money just to siphon it off. You call it an NPA, you are not repaying the loan, and there is no regulatory hammer that comes on you, so therefore you are not scared. Just to give certain numbers, I mean, when Vajpayee ji took over the government, he had about 17% of gross NPA. That was the inheritance that he got.
That's in 1998.
Yes. So once he handed over to the UPA in 2004. So when he had brought it down to somewhere about 7.8% kind of a thing. And what did UPA hand over to Modi ji? About 12%, 12.5%. And even that 12.5% was actual underreporting. That's a bigger revelation that comes out of the white paper. In reality, if you remove the underreporting and put everything on board, it becomes roughly about 18%.
So how was this underreporting being done?
Hiding, obviously, they are hiding the fact that this is an NPA.
Hmm.
What do? You evergreen the loan. Let's say I've taken 100 rupees from you.
Hmm.
I'm supposed to repay 100 rupees. But I'm not doing it because I'm siphoning it off, paying off the party bosses, so on and so forth, whosoever it is, or using it part for me, part for the politicians. Therefore, you're not repaying. If you don't repay beyond a point in time, let's say 180 days had, when that was the recognition norm, it becomes an NPA. So, if you don't want that to become an NPA, what do you want? That the interest be paid regularly. So, what do? You pay the interest by taking another 500 rupees loan. So the loan amount further increases, you are repaying the interest part of it, a small part of it, and once again further siphoning of the bigger amount of money. In a way, you call this an evergreening of loans. So the bank is giving more and more loan so that the loan looks proper and a productive asset. And
on
not
paper.
On paper and not a non-productive asset. So that NPA, non-performing asset, was in reality not recognized. And this white paper lays out very clearly, close to about 44% of the outstanding of some of the big corporates were in fact NPA in such a way that your total NPA would have been 18%. That exactly what Vajpayee ji inherited. So if you look at it, Vajpayee ji inherited close to 18%. He brought it down to 8%. And NPA shot up after the UPA 10 years back to what it was, 18% in reality, 12 plus 6. So that was the big shocker. Now, this is called a twin balance sheet problem, as you see. One balance sheet problem is for the banks because you have given out the loans, you're not able to get it back. The other side is with the corporates. They're saddled with loans. They're not being productive. So that pulls down the profitability of the corporates as well. So this was the biggest thing that, or rather, even if you read it today, you feel so shocked about the fact that this amount of NPA was let to happen, which was obviously due to political consideration, which
and
Prime Minister Modi, you know, very jokingly, but half-truth, it's not half-truth, jokingly, but full-truth, he says, phone banking. Someone from the ministry would call up and say, usko loan de do, knowing very well that the loan will not come back.
What is the situation today?
Today, if you're talking of NPAs, net NPAs, let's say, for example, was 6% when Modi ji took over. Today, it's less than 1%. Less than 1%. Matlab, your 6% to less than 1% is a massive transformation which makes the bank's assets highly productive, highly performing.
But for example, earlier it was 18%.
That was the gross NPA.
Gross
yeah. NPA.
Today, what is the gross NPA?
The gross NPA in the range of about 2.5% to 3%.
What?
3%.
So even less than 7% that Vajpayee ji executed.
Undoubtedly.
So 18% to 3%?
3%.
Interesting. That is a massive achievement.
It's more than a massive achievement. It's a mindset change. Achievement is an outcome.
Yeah.
It's a mindset change. The bankers were told very clearly, you need to run it professionally. Make sure that you generate profits. The same banking industry that would year after year show losses, last financial year, they showed a 1 lakh crore profits, the public sector banks. 1 lakh crore profits is not a joke at the PSB sector level.
But private investment is not picking up despite all these reforms, despite cleaning up the banks. Why private investment continues to be, so low?
I wouldn't call it so low. It's always a contextual comparison. If you take the kind of an investment that's happening at household level, for example, what were the avenues 10, 15 years ago versus what are the avenues today? Today, the avenues are the stock markets have opened up in such a way that's unthinkable, that was unthinkable earlier, right? Today, if you see the way the Sensex has zoomed up, why is it? Because even a small person from a small village is able to invest. You have the Zerodhas of the world that will enable you to sort of trade well, invest well. That's one part. Second part is the startups. People are putting their money. I can put probably a lakh or two or five or ten, depending on how much bandwidth I have, into a lot of startups. I run my own startup. So that's the kind of money that's being channeled out as well.
But that,
when you're talking, huh?
That is not reflecting in the GDP numbers.
No, GDP numbers, no, that's why, where is the issue? GDP numbers are showing really good, 7%, 8%.
Yeah, but most of it is being driven by, say, public expenditure on infrastructure and all these things.
Public expenditure is one interesting aspect that you brought up. If you look at year from 20 onwards, 22, 22, 23, the kind of situation that we have gone through, we as in just in, not just India, but the entire world, it's a once in a century kind of a crisis. And there as well, what needs to be really driven to bring in confidence and a sense of we are there reassurance is the government push. Therefore, government is putting its money. First part. Second part is, if you're taking a long-term view, you need to sort of look at the next 20 years, 30 years, which what the Prime Minister is rightly doing in terms of 2047. You need to put massive amount of money in capital expenditure that only the government can do. Just to give an instance, I'll give you one more number on capital expenditure. This is equally shocking. It is 31, 16, 28 is a set of figures. What is this? 31% was what the capital expenditure as a percentage of total expenditure during Vajpayee's time. During the UPS time, it came down to almost half, 16%. Now, Prime Minister Modi is putting it up to close to about 28%. Money is going. Where is the money going? For example, roads. You're talking of airports. We had 174 airports. Now you have close to 150, 149 airports. The number of roads that were built earlier were 12 kilometers a day. You had 28 kilometers a day being built. You had earlier 25,000 national highway roads. Now we have 54,000 kilometer highway roads. The money, and if you're talking of Project Gati Shakti, that in itself is a 100 lakh crore project over a period of 5 years. Money is coming from the government undoubtedly predominantly, but from the private sector as well. Now if you say, if you compare it with what was it during the UPA time, you also need to compare what was the size of the economy. What is the size of the investment done in capital expenditure by the government?
We have to talk in percentages.
Undoubtedly, yes. Not only percentages, but in comparison to the other things. For example, today we are the government, we as in the government is investing money close to 28% in capex. Congress was doing close to about 16%. You are doing more loans. In the sense, your fiscal deficit was ballooning like anything. Means you are taking loans.
Okay, I want to talk about that. Uh-huh. Fiscal deficit was a big thing. And the proponents or the supporters of the Modi government say that this is our biggest achievement, that despite this being election year, they have managed to reduce the target, the fiscal deficit. So that is, I think, unprecedented.
Fiscal deficit is always taken once again in context. For example, what does a fiscal deficit mean? You're taking loans, large amount of loan. And now the fiscal deficit also has a component of revenue deficit. Matlab, for your day-to-day expenditure also, you are taking loans. And you are taking loans to clear the other loans and interest payments, so on and so forth. That is a cause for concern. That used to be about 4%, 5% during UPA's time. Revenue deficit, alright? And naturally, the fiscal deficit, because you are borrowing more, we should ask, what was the money being used for? The money was not being used for capex. Just now I gave the figure from 31% of Vajpayee's time, you came down to 16%, right? Today we have pushed it up to once again 28, close to what Vajpayee's, the high achievement. Point of achievement was. So where was the money going? The money was being misspent, mismanaged on unwanted subsidies, unwanted waivers, and of course, expenditure that can be called highly, highly unproductive, including the salaries, ballooning of the salaries. If you look at what the UPA did, election year, give about 60,000, 70,000 crore rupees as farm loan waivers, right? And you're talking of giving a huge amount of money for the sixth pay commission in terms of saying the salaries need to be taken care, pension needs to be taken care of. But where is the money coming into the growth part of it? There was nothing.
But some would say that the money that the increased salaries of the government employees, that will also go in, you know, spending on things like housing, other, you know, day-to-day things. So it will go into economy only.
That was the biggest, if anything, if I remember, Pranab Mukherjee at some point in time also made a mention of this. The growth during the UPA era can be broken down into two things. One, they rode on the lag effects of Vajpayee's reforms, infrastructure.
This is not very intuitive for people. So can you explain how those reforms that Vajpayee ji carried out helped Manmohan Singh?
Sure, sure. Three things that Vajpayee ji focused on, apart from, the Pokhran or the Kargil war, so on and so forth, the nationalistic big time achievement. If you look at economic aspect, one is, as we were speaking earlier, brought down the NPA drastically down. That in itself was a massive achievement. You should take that in the context of he running a 24-party coalition. Mm. Right? Today, Modi ji runs a single party which is fully in majority and he is the undisputed leader. Vajpayee ji ran a coalition with 24 different parties and still managed to bring down the NPAs. Okay? So, controlling of the NPA was a major achievement. Controlling of the inflation was yet another big achievement of Vajpayee ji. Third one was the biggest thing, infrastructural investment. We spoke of the capex. You're talking of golden quadrilateral, you know, connecting the entire country with the major roads.
Grameen Sadak Awas Yojana.
The second one was the Pradhan Mantri Grameen Sadak Yojana. So you're connecting both the villages, the last mile. At the same time, you're having a big vision wherein the entire country needs to be connected. The amount of money that went in, let's say you're building a road, it takes about a year or two, Bangalore-Mysore Expressway, for instance, one of the best known examples of recent days. Once that road is done, it takes about a year or two for you to complete, then the businesses open up in a big way in terms of traveling between Bangalore and Mysore. Mm. Travel time has reduced. A lot of ancillary businesses will open up on the way. And the business that grows, it takes about 2 to 3 years. It's typically a capital expenditure, then a lag of 2-3 years for you to see those returns. So, till up to 2004, Vajpayee ji put a lot of money on controlling inflation. Therefore, people had real more money.
Mm.
In the sense, let's say if the inflation is 10% versus 5%, which means to say you are saving 5% each year.
Yes.
That's what Vajpayee ji did. Put real money in the hands of real people. Second thing was that made the banking sector robust so that they could lend more and business activities could kick off.
Mm.
Third one was infrastructural. Add to it, he gave a flip and a push to education. Sarva Shiksha Abhiyan. And both the primary as well as the higher education push that Vajpayee ji did, along with the infrastructural push, means in the next 3 years, 5 years, you are reaping the benefits of what Vajpayee ji had done.
Mm.
The global conditions were absolutely superb. You had come out of the 2000 Y2K issue. The global outlook was great. And it was, as they call it, irrational exuberance. You know, everyone was jumping with joy, a lot of good things happening. So UPA just went with the flow. They didn't have to do anything.
So when the UPA people talk about, Congress people talk about 10% growth that we achieved, that see, Modi ji is not able to even achieve 8% in a year. So, and we did 10%. So, you know, economist prime minister, that is the difference between an economist prime minister and a chaiwala. That is the term they use. So, how do you see that? Given
okay.
this,
okay. interesting.
I mean, because you talked about that global push was certainly there from 2003 to 2007. I think if you look at the world economy, it was booming like
booming.
Anything. Yeah.
Let's give take a very small layman's kind of an example. Okay, and let's say we both are of equal height in a way. You get a stand or a ladder to stand on. So naturally, probably you become taller. The place where I'm standing, it's probably deep in the earth by 2 feet or 3 feet down,
mm.
right? That's exactly what happened with Manmohan Singh ji. He was given on a platter a booming economy, right? You didn't have to do anything wrong. It would have further continued to grow. You had the lag effect of capital investment. Global economy was booming.
Mm.
India story, I mean, India is a story. Naturally, people were willing to invest. if only you had taken care not to screw up the economy. Raghuram Rajan spoke very clearly, between 2006 and 2008, maximum amount of NPA accounts originated, right? So compare that with what Modi ji is getting, right? 2014, you inherited a fragile 5 economy. So I'm already negative by 30-40%. I need to clean up the shit of the previous government. And then I come to zero. Imagine the Prime Minister of the country standing on the Red Fort and saying, we need to ensure the dignity of our women, of our mothers, wives and sisters and daughters are taken care of. We need to build toilets. That was in the year 2014. Ideally speaking, he should have given a platform wherein the toilets were there, water was there, electricity was there, gas was there, bank accounts were there, healthcare was there, education was there. Then he should have said, Modi ji, ab aage leke jao. But he had to give these basic stuff itself. Apart from cleaning what the mess the earlier government had done. So if you look at it, cleaning the mess itself is a massively big challenge. Massively big challenge, because it's so easy to get embroiled in big scams when easy money is there, big money is there. 2G scam, coal scam, and ironically speaking, the coal scam went way up to the door, almost to the door of the coal minister, who was also the prime minister of the country. The prime minister held the coal portfolio.
Some people would say that in white paper, you have listed 15 scams.
Okay.
I counted.
Okay.
There are 15 scams.
That's just an illustrative list. That's not an exhaustive list.
Of course, of course. But why none of these people have been punished? If they did really such big scams, lakhs of crores, why they have not been punished 10 years? That is their alibi also. They are saying that, okay, Modi ji, if we did the scam, why are you not arresting us?
Valid point. Absolutely valid point. I'm sure the white paper answers that as well. It gives the status of the various scams as on today. Legal process, that is one area wherein the government, Modi government, really needs to work on in terms of increasing their turnaround time, making sure justice is delivered in a shorter span of time, so on and so forth. But I'm sure Modi 3 will definitely put that on a priority to make sure that delivery of justice is taken care of. That will add to the GDP easily 1-2%. That's what the economists generally say. And I'm sure Modi ji will do it. Coming back to your question, each and every case, it's at various stages. It's either in the courts at appeal level, FIR has been lodged in all the cases. It's not that you're just making a statement or an accusation. You know, for example, Rahul Gandhi made an accusation, Rafael mein aapne paisa kha liya. That's an accusation. At least there should be an FIR. An FIR is lodged only when there is a prima facie evidence wherein you are able to showcase, if not in depth, but at least prima facie. But you have all the FIRs against all the people, investigations in various stages. Lot of people are behind the bars. It's just that you don't get to see one or two big names not being behind the bars. Doesn't mean that the second level, third level people are not. They are rotting in jail.
Yeah, I think some bureaucrats have been...
The coal scam, for example, Mr. Gupta, he himself is behind bars.
You talked about the good world economy was performing very well between 2003 and 2007. And that was the environment, global environment, that was positive that, you know, Manmohan Singh ji inherited.
Right.
But when we come to fiscal deficit, compare it to UPA era and now, some people would say that Modi government has also benefited hugely from outside factors. For example, the crude oil prices, those were above $100, then they came to $40 also. So that is like, you know, a multi-billion dollar windfall for the government, and the prices is still very high for the, you know, oil, much higher than, not much, but higher than what it was in UP era, despite the price being double. So what would you say, like, Modi government also benefited and they taxed more, so it was a double benefit for them. So, of course, fiscal deficit should have come down. It has come down. So, how would you respond to that?
Valid point. At the same time, I would want to put a word of caution. An apple-to-apple comparison in the sense wherein petrol price hamare yahan itna tha, aapka itna hai, is a very laymanish way of talking. I mean, it appeals to a layman, fair enough. But if you're talking of a budget as a whole, what are you doing? You're looking at the country's income, the country's expenditure, both on the revenue side and the capital expenditure side. What is the vision that you have for the country? These are the two, three things that we need to be looking at. Now, your source of income, your revenue sources can be five different things. You need to maximize your revenue sources. Then the use of funds. Where do you put the funds? You prioritize it. For example, you need to ensure that each and every basic necessity of life is made available to every citizen, starting from a house to a toilet to a water, electricity, gas cylinder, a bank account, healthcare, education. These are the absolute bare basic. That requires funds. I'm not even talking of COVID and post-COVID, wherein you're giving food grains to about 80 crore people free of cost, right? But these things do cost you. But the benefit that comes out of this is immense. Let's say you'd have taken 10 rupees more from fuel, from the oil thing, petrol thing. But the 10 rupees invested here will give you probably 100 rupees as a outcome. Because the poor people, where there's a lot of inherent potential and power and energy, it's unlocked now. You're unlocking tier 2 and tier 3. Today, if you go to tier 2 and tier 3, they are no less aspiration than any metropolitan youth. They are willing to go the whole hog. And that's exactly what Prime Minister is enabling them. He's enabling them. He says that I don't have create anything in them. They have the potential. I'm unlocking the value. I'm unshackling them and empowering them to sort of be who they are.
For example, my view on this is slightly different because I see that if you look at the numbers, the fuel consumption, I think, by businesses, for example, trucks who carry, you know, our food, our essential things, that is, I think, the proportion-wise, that I don't know the exact numbers, but I feel that that would be more. And if you less that, you know, the transaction cost, the business cost, that's a huge portion, the fuel cost. And if we bring that down, the commodity prices, the inflation also, that will also have a positive impact. So I'm not sure that if we spend that money on these things, will have a bigger impact than what we can facilitate by, you know, reducing the price of the oil. But one criticism of less inflation, we saw in the UP era that inflation was high, so everybody was, you know, feeling pain. Middle class, even rich people, poor people, though.
The big.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But now what has happened is inflation has come down and we are seeing a lot of protests by the farmers. So this is something that has happened because in earlier time when UPA was there, the inflation, food inflation was very high. So all these crops and they were getting very good price. But now comparatively, if you look at, you know, 10 years, if you see the change, it is not much. So they are feeling the impact. So how do we, you know, create this balance?
This is a very wrong notion. Very wrong notion.
Okay.
When you say inflation is less, it doesn't mean that the prices are falling.
No, no, of course not.
I mean, I'm talking
you as not the you.
I'm talking of the common man when they think of it.
Yeah.
When we say, oh, inflation has come down, when we say, for example, it's a technical term, but for a common man, the perception might be, have the prices come down? No, the prices haven't come down. Earlier, if item was, let's say, about 100 rupees.
Rate of increase.
Yes, exactly, exactly. I mean, you understand technical things, but for a common man, he'll say, it should have come down. Is that what it is, inflation? No, that's not the thing. It is increasing, but at a decreasing rate.
If it decreases, it will be a big problem
exactly,
for the economy.
Exactly, deflation
also
would be a bigger problem.
Yeah.
So, therefore, answering your question, exactly, I'm coming to that. This is not a deflation situation wherein the farmers need to say, the prices are coming down. They are not coming down. First point.
For example, what happened was, I think 2004, say 2009, May, because inflation was rising and 2014, their prices were increasing fast. You know, the selling price. So now after Modi ji came, the price, the rate of increase has slowed down. So of course, when you compare of the two governments, he will feel that, okay, main pehle theek tha. Matlab abhi kuch ho raha hai gadbad. But generally, people will feel better because inflation is very
undoubtedly under control.
Yeah.
There, the issue would have been, if someone needs to feel the heat, it should be the trader, not the farmer. My assessment is, what does a farmer get? Generally, he should get a MSP, which is about 150% of your cost, roughly speaking, right? If that is the case, and he is anyway getting only the in and around the MSP part, but the additional surplus is captured by the trader should have the feel the heat, not the farmer. The farmer ko kya, if anything, the MSP has increased both price-wise and quantity intake-wise. The amount of food grains lifted by the central government has drastically increased. The pricing as well has increased, MSP pricing. So there is absolutely no reason why they need to be feeling the heat. There is no heat for them. For the trader, yes, maybe. But trader gets his own comfortable margin without having to take a big risk, and still he is better off. But if you are talking of easy big surplus that you were getting earlier and now you are not getting, yes, that's what the whole thing is. Prime Minister's profit philosophy is very clear. Profits for all, profiteering for none. I still remember Anant Kumarji telling me this. Profits for all. Prime Minister believes that don't do anything charity for anything because it's a economic commercial engagement. They should get their money. Unlike, but profiteering for none.
Unlike Nehru, who said profit is a dirty word.
Exactly. Profit is a dirty word is a sure shot recipe for pulling down the country.
So we talked about inflation. We talked about deficits. We talked about scams.
NPAs.
We talked about NPAs. One thing that remains is the policy paralysis. You know, when we think of a, you know, economy, and we don't usually focus on what happens when there is no policy formation, because that paralysis in the governance has a really big impact on the businesses who want to invest also. When they see that the government is not performing and it's not working, it has completely collapsed. So they also withhold the, you know, investments and activity also, and it has a very negative impact on the economy.
True, true.
So compared to that, right now it's very, I don't know, what is the hyper policy formation, what is the word for that in this high contrast. So how do you see this going forward? Because when we, what happened in UPA is after all these scams started coming out, they lost the will to govern.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing like that has happened, and there is no anti-incumbency as far as I can see. There might be some, but largely there is not. But in third term, how do you see what kind of policies that we can expect? And if any word that you can say on the policy paralysis versus what is happening now, what is your take on that?
Beautiful. I mean, absolutely valid point that many of us have as well. And incidentally, I would want to narrate the anecdote that happened during the recent national convention at the BJP. The Prime Minister addressed all of us and he took this specific question itself. 10 years you have given a decent, good government, people are proud of it, lot of positives to speak of. There is absolutely no anti-incumbency, as you pointed out.
Comfortably. I didn't say absolutely.
Okay.
You
okay.
Are saying it.
Okay. There might be in some pockets anti-incumbency, yeah. You said. Okay. But predominantly, yeah. Everyone believes that Modi will come back with a fairly good number, maybe a bigger number.
Actually,
whatever.
You know what people are saying now, uh-huh, that, uh-huh. You know, 8% plus growth.
Okay.
You know, India shining.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's happening now, nobody thinks there is anti-incumbency. So what does that remind us of?
That's okay. Political pundits, they are probably better in terms of understanding what
it
is.
But I speak economics purely. The ghost of 2004 doesn't go somehow.
Exactly. I'll answer that question through the Prime Minister's words. He says, we are here sitting in a comfortable position, pole position comfortably. But still, why am I exhorting each one of you to go out, reach out to the common man, make sure that our narrative in terms of what all achievement that we have done is conveyed and he is engaged. He said two things. One, winning elections, we are already in a way comfortably placed. But still we are doing it. It's not because of politics or winning elections alone. That's a small part. The bigger part is we are doing it for the country. We are looking at a massive transformation of the country as our goal. And to make that happen, you need to be in power for 10 more years, 20 more years, 30 more years. So being in power is a tool, is a medium through which you bring about the country's transformation. You would want to make Param Vaibhavam Netu Metat Swarashtram. That is the kind of a vision that you have for the country. And for that, why are we required? Because as you rightly said, there is no policy paralysis. You take last 10 years, not a single scam. I mean, in the world of social media, hyper social media, wherein a small whisper of anyone can probably come out in Facebook or Twitter so soon. Not a single scam. 10 long years, and each and every area where Congress faltered, we were able to bring about a transformation and showcase that we are able to do it, implement it, execute it at scale with speed. And he is still raring to go. He and his ministers, each one of them. I love to say, speak of this data repeatedly, and allow me a minute to say that. The time-bound implementation has been one of the biggest hallmarks of Modi government. First 6 months, he told Anant Kumarji, I want 100% neem coated of urea. It happened. He told Jaitley ji, in 4 months, I want 20 crore Jandan accounts. That happened. He told Dharmendra Pradhan, Piyush Goyal ji, in 1,000 years, I want all the villages, 18,000 plus villages electrified. That happened within 1,000 days. He told Dharmendra Pradhan ji, in 5 years, I want 6 crore cylinders. He did some probably 7 crore cylinders as well. He told Anand Kumar ji, once again, in 5 years, I want 5,000 Janoshi centers. We did that. So each and everything, he says, he take a particular program, a scheme, understand the pros and cons, take a decision, ruthless implementation, at scale, at speed. Gadkari ji is an example, a burning example. You know, to do 12 kilometers a day, UPA was struggling left, right and center. He does 28, 29 kilometers with ease and aplomb. And you're still raring to go. You say, what we have done is very small thing. A lot more needs to be done. Maybe. Dreaming of a big thing, of a developed economy, Viksit Bharat.
Maybe next 5 years we can focus on solving the traffic issues. Roads are good, but no matter how many lanes you make, two will be people, they will be standing there and parking their vehicles on it. But coming to policy paralysis, the one allegation that people can make and the critics who will make against the white paper is political bias is there because you have not talked about the good things that Manmohan Singh government did. For example, FDI liberalization, the nuclear policy deal with the US. And there are many things that you could have quoted, but you didn't. And when we talk about policy paralysis, they give example of 2015 mm-hmm. Land Acquisition mm-hmm. Act. You know, it could not be implemented. The NJAC that was brought in for reforms in the judiciary, and then farm laws, those were rolled back. So it's not all hunky dory. So when you compare, actually, thoda sa matlab black and white paper hai ye. Some people are saying not grey paper. That should be.
I'll give an example. Okay, let's say a patient is admitted to a hospital, and then he comes back during the last moment. There's a discharge summary given. Okay, so the discharge summary speaks of what problem he came with, the condition in which the patient was there, what was the treatment given, and how the transformation has happened, how is stable now. The doctor in the discharge summary, they will not want to say earlier he used to run 8 kilometers or 2 kilometers, eat 3 times a day. That's not our concern. Mm-hmm. He came to the hospital in an ICU for a reason. We make a mention of those reasons and probably the reasons that brought him in there, how we diagnosed the problems, how we treated the problem, and put him back on a stability mode. That's what we are trying to do. Mm. Now it's for the Congress. Nothing stops Rahul Gandhi to go to the people and speak of the good things they have done, if you think that they have done. Instead of just going and abusing Modi ji and saying that he is not an OBC, or you people don't include Sita in Ram. These are all stupid arguments with anyone who knows a bit of Sanskrit knows that's wrong. But any which way. So he's doing these kind of arguments. What stops him from saying, 10 years we did these things. Remember, 10 good things that we did in 10 years. Why can't I say that? No one stops him from saying it, right? Coming to the areas where we have rolled back certain things, NJAC was struck down by the court, farm laws we rolled back, land acquisition, there was an issue. Are we saying that we give 10 on 10 for the kind of work that we have done? Unlikely, because it's always a work in progress. But we intend to become 10 on 10. We are working towards that. It's a work in progress. A lot of things where we have done fairly well. And a lot of areas wherein we still need to do more. And Prime Minister himself said in absolutely words, this is the right thing for the farmers. At the same time, I need to put the country's interest. And meri tapasya mein kuch kami hai. So he's working on his tapasya. He'll bring it back. And we are nowhere to go. We are not going anywhere, right? And we are here for the next 20 years, 30 years, making sure that each area is strengthened so that the country, it's not about Modi, it's not about BJP, it's about the country becoming strong. When he talks of Viksit Bharat, there is no BJP in it, there is no Modi in it. It's Viksit Bharat for our children, for our grandchildren. That's the kind of a vision that he has, and he's dedicated himself for that cause.
So, 2024 to 2029, what reforms would you like to see?
Couple of things. One is the bureaucratic reforms for which the spade work has already started.
For example?
Okay. 2-3 years ago itself, you started getting private sector players coming into the government, lateral entry. If you take the policy, for example, the
drone
policy.
But I think that is very less, no? I think 10 people
absolutely,
were only.
Absolutely. I'm saying a step has been made. a Big Bang reform should happen, as you said, that will happen in term 3. If the drone policy, that was one of the most successful policies done in a very short span of time with complete stakeholder engagement across the stakeholders, a large amount of credit goes to Mr. Ambar Dubey. Ambar Dubey was the joint secretary who came in as a lateral entry.
Okay.
And he came out with this policy. The Prime Minister has been gung-ho about it, has been praising that policy for the kind of work that Mr. Dubey has done. Mm. But broadly speaking, drone as a tool of development. Prime Minister talking of drone Didi. You'd have heard of the term. Yes. He's talking, saying that the women in the villages, they become drone Didis, ensuring that the farm development happens. That is a kind of a technology with the ground connect, literally the ground connect that he's bringing about. And this is where, when you say in the third term, what should be the key changes?
But those drones are coming from China, I think. Some production is happening there. I think the next step should be key. We should have like policy that only, you know, made in India drones we should allow.
Beyond drones, if you want me to talk exactly about made in India, PLI is something that we didn't talk, but that's one of the most amazing things ever done by the Modi government.
White paper mein wo comparison bhi electronics ka.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Today, as recent as last week, we got to see the kind of focus on semiconductors. We would want to make sure that it's in our control. When you talk of Atmanirbharata, Prime Minister spoke of this. Sarvam paravasham dukham, sarvam atmavasham sukham. What do you mean by Atmanirbhar Bharat? You say that is which is in your control is what gives you happiness and satisfaction. That control is required. It doesn't mean that you close yourself to the outside world, but it should be in your control of the national control.
Hmm.
That's where we are looking at, be it your semiconductors, be it your chips, and you're talking of the latest thing like AI, or it could be a basic thing like an API, basic in terms of your health for the healthcare sector. Modi ji has put in the kind of an amount that probably no one would have put. You know, one shot he said 1,76,000 crore for the PLIs plus another 76,000 crore for your semiconductors. Intent is you start developing more and more capability in the country. It's a long, you know, it's like making a ship turn, take a U-turn. You just can't do it immediately. There are some amount of imports coming, including China. I'll go one step further. A lot of things that we have banned from China, but people find it very convenient ways wherein China exports to XYZ country. From there, it goes to ABC country, and from ABC, it comes to India.
How can we stop this? This is a big problem.
It is a process. I mean, as I said, therefore, it is not a one-time thing, but an ongoing exercise by the government of India. They are on the job. They know where probably it's coming from the moment they realize, trying to put in more new processes so that that's taken care of. But the best way to take care of it, become your own manufacturing hub. That's where we are on the way. It might take a couple of years more, but we are on it.
When Raghuram Rajan talks about that in, the world cannot take another China, so what do you think about that? Will it be a competition with China, or will it be something that will, you know, happen in a complementary way where we grow in things that are that they are not excelling at, or how it will be?
Raghuram Rajan, either he is unaware of it, but unlikely that he can be unaware. So most likely he is biased by his political colors and views of working closely with Rahul Gandhi and the Congress coterie. India is in no way trying to replicate what China has done. For a moment, let's completely be clear on this. We are not here to become the lowest cost producing country of the world, factory of the world. No, we are not getting into that. Our aspect is very clear. The positioning of the Prime Minister is very clear. India itself is a massively big market internally. We will cater to our own internal thing by our own manufacturing capability, which will ensure that we move to one, two levels up on equilibrium between supply and demand. We are supplying more internally, we are consuming more, move up the ladder, move up the ladder. When it comes to worldwide engagement, we are moving up the ladder there as well. You're talking of value-added products, be it IT, be it services, products, including AI, including your semiconductor. He is talking of we moving up the ladder rather than being the factory what China was.
Hmm.
We don't want to be a Chinese wala factory which says we give you the cheapest thing. We are not looking at that at all. Manufacturing capability, yes. For the high-end products for ourselves and the world, yes. That's where the real big money, at the same time the need of the hour is.
But don't you think that this started with the cheapest thing and, you know, copying all these things from the West, and they did that. But right now, the quality, the scale, everything has been really good now for them. They are at, you know, as far as the quality goes, they are as good as what is being produced in the West.
If you can give me some 5 different brands that Chinese items that you purchase versus the unbranded local
mic item that we are using.
Fair enough, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that anyway comparable to a Bose speaker where you get that kind of premium? No.
I think
you
might, DJI is much better than Rode.
Probably you could talk of 1-2 things, 5 items here and there. I'm not disputing that, or rather getting into the intricacies of those 5-7 items. But broadly speaking, what does China's, I come back to the corporate jargon where we talk
I'm
of.
I'm just saying that rather than looking at the quality, they focused on the quantity and they learned the basics and then they upgraded themselves.
Where have they upgraded is the question that I'm asking. Today, how many cars do you see apart from MG of the Chinese make on the Indian roads or roads elsewhere? But you look at the Korean cars, if you look at the Japanese cars, if you look at the European or the American cars, they're a dime a dozen. Of course, Indian cars themselves are there. The point is, where are the Chinese cars on the Indian road except for your MG? Or for that matter, anywhere else? What we are trying to build is, yes, there are a lot of things right from a small pen to a small pen and so on and so forth, which we need to manufacture internally as well, rather than import from China. There also, I need to make a political point. API, which is a very key ingredient in your pharma sector, because I worked in the pharma, I'm able to understand this and say with a lot of hurt and sadness. In the year 2004, we imported just about 12 to 15% of it from China. And by the time UPS 10 years was over, we are importing close to about 90% of it from China. We
90%.
Become totally, totally dependent on them. We become dependent on them. And the first thing that the Prime Minister was trying to reverse this. Now the question to be asked is, why did we become dependent on China? We could have just been where we were, or probably give or take a small increase or decrease. Why is it that we went so overly dependent on them? That the Congress should answer. Of course, today we are trying to reverse it. We will reverse it. It might take a couple of years more, but we're definitely on the way.
And not just us. Like, I think in COVID, everyone realized that how much dependent they were on China.
Dependency was not a problem. The ill intent of China was a problem then.
Yeah,
they realized that China is not playing fair. China is not being open. China is not being transparent. Be it the origin of virus, be it when the transformation happened. As late as January, when it was flying, it was transmitting from person to person in a big way, China, through the World Health Organization, was making a statement saying that people can travel, it is not transmittable from people, it is not a pandemic, blah, blah, blah. And 1 week down the line, 2 weeks down the line, the entire world is succumbing to it, right?
Mm.
So they were not transparent about the fact. Even to this day, there are a lot of 10 scientific conspiracy theories about how origin of the Wuhan virus, be it as may. The point is, countries have decided no more only China policy.
Hmm.
It is either China plus one.
They are diversifying.
China plus one or shut down China. If you look at Samsung, they said, we'll give you a penalty for winding up, but we wind up China and come to India. They have done that.
Hmm.
Apple have migrated to a large extent from China to India. Today, made in India phones are available, iPhones are available in India and for exports. That's the story that we are trying to build up. We are not just looking at pins coming in from China or pens coming. That also will happen in India. But our focus is, we need to move up the value added ladder.
So you work with the corporates and startups especially. What will it take for us to, you know, create Google and Apple and, you know, these kind of companies, startups that, you know, Teslas of the world? So the next big innovation, even AI, you know, they are doing it first. We are just trying to copy it. So when will we, you know, be at the forefront of this innovation?
And this is one thing that's high on the priority for the Prime Minister himself. So when you talk of Viksit Bharat, he speaks of what exactly does a Viksit Bharat look like or mean for us. He says not only the standard of living is very high for us, we are leading the world in terms of research, we are leading the world in terms of R&D and the latest cutting edge technology and being implemented for our benefit and for the others' benefit as well. That automatically answers the point that we need to go in there. Today, take the case of, let's say, Zerodha. That's a solid example of homegrown entrepreneurship. that's trying to come out with a solidly good product that's enabling people with a lot of convenience, easy access to market, mode of investment, so on and so forth. AI, a lot of Indian firms are coming up. You get to see them trying to be in the race, in a way, for want of better words. But if you say that, when do we become
leaders,
where the Googles of the world come in, you go back in time and start realizing that the Stanfords and the Harvards of the world, what they were 50 years, 100 years ago, started putting in money, built up a big corpus, built up an industry academia engagement, and that's where they were able to do it. NEP is a right step in that direction. Trying to bring that kind of an engagement, you know, the startup, the industry, and the academia, with both multiple entries and multiple exits, that's what entrepreneurship requires. You know, for example, 2 years, I study and then I go back to the outside world. If you go to IIT Madras, for example, Vynos is one massively good platform that the IIT Madras faculty, Mr. Professor Thillayarajan, has been doing. It comes out as significant as this, you know, very audacious, confident and bold, that they can create a new startup ecosystem. We are on it.
We need more of this.
Undoubtedly, we need more of it. And it's a time-consuming process. It's not like it can happen overnight. But are we not in the right direction? Undoubtedly, we are. Are we not getting the good speed we are getting? It's only a matter of time that we cross the distance.
Great discussion, sir. Thank you so much.
Big pleasure talking. Yes, this economy is one aspect that, you know, you can go on for hours together. Yeah. It's important that that should happen. And I'm glad that you spoke of it very, very, very focusedly when you said that more discussions need to happen.
Yes, that it's is
not,
the objective.
It's not just about, okay, we are right and you're wrong. That's okay. I mean, our biases, depending on various...
I was actually surprised that the other side is also not coming up with Congress, and they should be debating that, okay, your white paper, you have this, this point is wrong, this point is right. We did this, we did that. There are nobody talking about this white paper. Either, I mean, like, even from the BJP side, they did for 2-3 days and then they stopped. So I would, this is my goal, ki people, more people should be discussing this.
Okay, to answer this, I think I'll answer this a bit politically. Congress has realized that, yeah, there is nothing that you can do to counter it. And I'm being honest about it.
But I'm sure they may have some good points.
No, in which case, why don't you come out with that?
Yeah.
In which case, why don't you come out with it? And it's not a press statement being released by the IT cell or the media department of the BJP. It's an official document of the government of India. You can hold the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister to account if they have given one single wrong data, right? It's not about a press statement, shoot and scoot. That's not the case, right? It's an official document. Why aren't you countering it? Coming to the BJP is obviously, whether we use the term white paper or not, we've already been talking of the comparison between then versus now, how we have brought the transformation. Maybe the terminology white paper in itself may not have been taken in a big way, but I'm sure it's a matter of time. More such discussions in your platforms like you, it will pick up.
And definitely more discussions like this should happen. Congress people, other parties, BJP, everybody should talk and discuss all these things, because going forward, this is what will matter.
Undoubtedly.
Like,
undoubtedly,
we should not be repeating the mistakes of the past, and we should also reflect on what shortcomings we have.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much, sir, for giving so much time and talking to us. Next time when we meet, we will discuss about startups, and I am really interested in talking about your work as in Jan Aushadhi, because that is really something that I really appreciate.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, and a pleasure having you.
Namaste.
Thank you.